heavens!
God, give me a second to catch my breath.
Man. We made it!
Yeah. I didn't think we would for a minute.
Yeah, we managed to escape.
Yeah.
Linux from that towers.
It crumbles behind us.
Yeah. Are you alright, Ben?
Just about, yeah.
Oh, wow. That was a truly epic moment.
Yeah.
And who's that in the distance? What?
Is that... No.
Mike? What? Ben?
John?
John!
John, hey guys!
What? I didn't expect this. What are you doing here?
I just returning from my sysadmin-funded palace. Or temporary trip to the sunny southwest of England.
Welcome!
Yeah. How are you guys? What's been going on? You look out of breath. You look distressed.
There's been problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we're still alive.
Good.
That's the main thing.
Good.
We can't talk too much about it, but it means we are alive to start the Linux Lifestyle Podcast.
Woo!
Yes, this is Season 1, Episode 1 of the Linux Lifestyle Podcast. I'm Mike Saunders.
I'm Ben Everard.
I'm Jonathan Roberts.
How have you been, John?
Yeah, pretty well, actually. Busy, settling down into a new life.
Yeah?
Yeah, good.
You are fixing other people's problems on computers, then?
Mostly problems that I've caused, in all honesty. But, yeah, otherwise, other than that, it's fine when I don't break stuff, so...
Do you miss Cornwall?
I miss Cornwall, and I miss Bath.
Yeah.
I also miss Exeter in between, for all the lies that were spread about me since my departure from Linux Format and my hatred of Devon. I did live in Exeter, and I did very much enjoy it.
That's great.
Anyway, so what's the plan here? What are we getting up to today?
We are going to have this... We're starting this brand new podcast with brand new sections that are actually quite familiar.
Cool.
But yes, in this podcast, we've got news about a certain magazine situation. We've got news about the 30th anniversary of the GNU announcement. We've got things that we found out in a week. We've got...
things that we found out in a week?
Yeah, it's a great section.
You mean like some kind of discovery?
Well, that's one way of looking at it. But,
so how often is this podcast being recorded? So is it weekly or fortnightly?
Well, this is 1 week since the last podcast where everybody died. Yeah,
so things we've discovered in a week.
Yes, yeah. Then we've got the thing that's like where people ask us to do things. Well, you know, some people call it a challenge. And we have Voice of the Masses, which is a great opportunity for our listeners to tell us things.
Speak sort their of, brains?
Well, sort of like posting votes in a ballot, so...
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. If Excellent. You love this podcast, then keep your eyes on linuxlifestyle.com and let's see what happens. Let's get straight into the news then, shall we, Ben?
Okay, into the news.
Yeah, there's some news.
Ah, the news. Yes, you... I'm guessing if you listen to this, you were probably a former Tux Radar listener, and obviously... from the makers of Linux Format. So I guess the first item of news is that Linux Format does still exist. So yeah, as we mentioned in the last Tux Radar podcast, myself, Graham and Andrew have left Linux Format.
Wow.
For reasons we're not really at liberty to discuss, but basically we felt we could no longer create a quality magazine under those conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so stay tuned for news on what we do in the future.
That is pretty big news, actually. Yeah,
yeah, it's really brave of you all as well. It's a hard decision when you feel like you can't do what you want to do and you can't create what you want to go and, you know, look for something else, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I'm now one of those unemployed people David Cameron warns you about.
Are you a neet, then?
I am a neet.
Excellent.
Not in employment, education or training.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you are over 16.
Ah, do you have to be under 16?
Oh, but then it would be NITOS or something. Not employment, education or training, under 16, yeah.
I just hang about in my hoodie on street corners.
Hugger hoodie. Isn't that what Dave said?
Yeah.
He's got a hugger hoodie.
But yeah, moving on to the next item, please. Congratulations, GNU, for your 30th anniversary. Whee!
Yep. This is the 30th anniversary of Richard Stallman's announcement, isn't
yes.
it? So GNU itself, I think, started a bit before, but this was his first announcement, Stallman's announcement on the newsgroups on net.unixwizards.net.usoft. Well, that's actually two newsgroups. But yeah, on the 27th of September 1983, he said, "Starting this Thanksgiving, I'm going to write a completely Unix-compatible software system called GNU, for GNU's not Unix, and give it away free to everyone who can use it." Contributions of time, money, programs, and equipment are greatly needed. To begin with, GNU will be a kernel plus all the utilities needed to write and run C programs. I mean, massive respect to Stallman for starting this and everything. It's interesting that he started off with the kernel, and yet the herd is what stage of production? Yeah,
I don't know, but as part of the new release and celebrating the 30th anniversary of GNU, they have launched a new release of the herd and the microkernel Mac, and something else. But
did you ever use the herd? I remember Andrew Gregory once booted the herd live CD, and he thought he was really leet for ages.
Yeah, I've used it. I don't think I managed to get X to work. I think there was driver related issues.
Yeah.
But I got to a command line once.
Well, that's pretty cool. But the most important thing is, do you know what herd stands for? Because it's a doubly recursive acronym, as everybody loves.
Oh no, not another one. So what is like infinite recursion in GNU, and what does herd stand for?
Herd is a herd of interfaces representing herd of Unix replacing daemons, which is also stands for a herd of interfaces representing depth or something like that.
Okay.
More attention has been paid on the name than actually getting the herd working, I think.
Well, it's a clever name, just as GNU is a clever name.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I think it was quite ambitious, the design of the herd. You know, it was a microkernel, wasn't it? And everything would be in user space, so drivers would be able to fall apart without taking down the system. But
I guess we shouldn't focus too much on the herd, though. As cool as it is that they've made a new release to celebrate the 30th birthday, we really should celebrate the fact that all of the user land tools, GCC,
Glibc,
all of those familiar components that make everything work, really, and give us the ecosystem that we love today. It's been such a success for 30 years.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic achievement.
And just driving the cause of free software. Mm. I mean, the licenses alone are hugely important.
I think as much as anything, the GNU general public license is probably the biggest contribution that the GNU project has made over and above the tools, especially now LLVM and Clang and stuff like that is starting to show signs of replacing some of the traditional GNU tools.
Yes.
But without the traditional GNU tools, there wouldn't have been the workspace there to build LLVM and Clang.
Yeah. Either way, whatever we can say, it's a fantastic achievement, and all credit to Richard Stallman and the rest of the Free Software Foundation for all the contribution they've made.
And I think, you know, fair play to Rich Stallman as well for not selling out. For, you know, sometimes we get annoyed by him, sometimes we think he's said something silly, but he's stuck by his principles through thick and thin, through every sort of challenge, and he might waffle on about GNU/Linux and things, but yeah, he's there. He's still defending this when, you know, a lot of time we can all think, oh, let's just give up and get, you know, a Windows mobile phone, for instance.
Well, yeah, and, you know, anyone who gets a Windows mobile phone, I'm sure will soon regret it.
Interesting.
Yeah, I can speak from personal experience. And as well with Richard Stallman, you know, I think the significance of what he's done and what the free software movement as a whole has done has been put into stark perspective over the last few months and year or so with the revelations about the NSA and GCHQ and the ability to audit your software to read the source code.
Yeah.
It's become obvious just how important that really is. I'm never going to read the whole of the Linux kernel, but I trust that there's enough smart people who have read the Linux kernel and are continuing to read it and debate questions like random number generation off hardware devices in Intel and stuff. But it's probably still, and it's probably the most secure platform there is out there, the one I have most confidence in.
I did actually want to read the Linux source code, not all the drivers and all the big, but the
that's
main
a lot,
core.
Yeah.
But yeah, the core of it, and this is back in 2.6 days, so it could have changed quite a bit, probably has changed quite a bit, but it's actually really interesting.
How many WTF comments were there?
I didn't come across any.
Did you see the story the other day? The someone's done a study to discover the most WTF-y language out there.
Yeah.
The trouble is, WTF is quite a common in libraries, I call, and
it's
a framework as well. Something framework.
Awesome.
So these people who researched for the most WTF-y language with one particular idea in mind, actually may have just completely missed the point.
Yeah, it's not like the kernel square count. Actually, there used to be a book by a guy called Robert Love. It's basically a guide to the Linux kernel. I don't know if he's updated it for more recent versions, but it's a really interesting read.
So this must be bits that, like say, aren't drivers and things that are very specific, but things like the memory manager,
exactly,
and scheduler, the real core of the core.
And it's actually, because it's so runs at such a basic level, it's really, in a way, it's really elegant, simple code. It's not that complex. And it's actually, and it's really cool. It's understandable. It's like, wow, I can actually understand how my operating system works.
So what was that book called? I might look that up.
can't remember.
How to be a kernel hacker.
Robert Love.
Robert Love.
Oh, yeah. We'll hopefully put it in the show notes at the end.
Richard Love.
I remember reading the head.s, which is the assembly code for when the kernel boots. It is like the start of the universe, because you've got nothing but a bare PC. And as a sort of hobbyist OS developer myself, you know, I quite like poking around in these things. But yeah, nothing's been set up at that stage. There's no memory management. So there's just lots of poking things around into the registers and Linux. You know, a whole Unix environment starts to appear piece by piece.
That's fantastic.
Is it like watching the birth or a birth?
Yes.
The head appears.
That's what I thought of, yeah.
There's a lot of screaming.
Yeah, a lot of blood. And nobody's quite sure what it is from there.
Is it a boy? Is it a girl? Actually, I went to see some friends who just had their first child 5 days ago, and apparently they didn't know the sex of the baby before it was born, and the nurse held it up and said, you know, here's your baby, tell your wife what it is. And the dad said he couldn't quite tell. Where you go, oh, it's a girl, okay.
A boy without a winkle.
So he got there eventually. Anyway, he probably won't be that pleased with me saying that on the podcast. I'm sure he won't listen either.
Psychological issues later in life.
Should crowbar this discussion back into the news?
Sorry for the little diversion there.
What's the next news item?
The final news item is about Steam.
The Steam. We said there was a third announcement in the last Ux Radar podcast. We said, you know, Steam have announced two things out of three. The final one is a controller. I was expecting it to be games. Mm. I was wrong. They've announced a controller for SteamOS to go with the Steam Box.
What do you think of the sound of a controller, though?
Well, we'll describe it first. It doesn't have, like, joysticks. It has two round
touchpads.
Mm. I'm not really a gamer, so I'm probably the wrong person to ask. It looks a bit odd to me.
It has a touchscreen in the middle as well, right?
Does it?
And they're moving away from four dedicated buttons in a diamond shape, a la the Xbox controller.
A la SNES,
They're going to be putting the four buttons on the corners of the touchscreen in the center of the controller.
How is that going to work?
I don't know. And it sounds... I think I've missed the tactile feedback of actually pushing a button.
Yeah, that's the problem playing a lot of games on phones, isn't it? I can't play like platform games very well on phones and tablets. You want physical buttons. I'm not much of a modern PC gamer myself anyway. But, yeah. But, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, they must have play-tested this a lot.
Imagine a company who makes games, their staff are going to be gamers themselves, and they're going to have been using this controller for months before they decided to launch it.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. I think you just have to try it. You can't look at it and think, what it'll be like. It's too different. Mm. Once you've got it in your hands, you'll know, this works or no, this doesn't work.
Has anyone used the Wii U, though?
No. Have you?
Yeah. No, I haven't, but it sounds similar, so I was thinking it might be useful. If any listeners have used the Wii U and want to comment on how they think that'll reflect on the Steam controller, it'd be great to hear your thoughts in the comments.
Yeah, or listeners, if you want to send us a Wii U for testing, then just drop us a line in the comments.
Yeah. And the other thing is, we assume it's just to accept any generic USB controller, so presumably there'll be a whole market opening up for...
That would fit right in with Val's messaging about how they want it to be an open platform for game development.
Absolutely, yeah. And of course, you know, we're not really talking directly about Linux here, but it's going to be working with SteamOS, so Linux is still going to be at the core of all this.
Yeah, I guess any games ported to run on SteamOS, and imagine there'll be more efforts focused on porting games to SteamOS will benefit Linux users because it will run on the Linux Steam client as well. So that's really exciting news.
Yeah, and I assume you'll have to use this controller with a generic Linux box as well, should you wish.
Yeah, so if it does turn out to be really cool, you know, and we're all surprised by it, then great.
I think as well, and also that's traditionally it's been one of the big areas where Linux reasons people have kept dual booting systems around at home is they've had Linux for everything, Windows for games.
Yeah.
So as Steam comes along and pushes Linux as its platform, that's going to eradicate that reason for people keeping dual booting systems around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next thing that I want to see is more support for movie rentals and stuff like that on Linux, because that's a big thing I miss, especially seeing that the old video store here in Bath has closed down in the last year. Disappointed.
Should we cut that there? Because that joins into our free vote or voice of the people a little bit.
It does actually, yes. Yeah, voice of the masses coming up where we talk about whether it's possible to live flash free.
Ah, okay.
That would be interesting. But yeah, at this point, it's time to move on to the cannily named Things We Found Out in a Week. Which is a great section. It's my favourite, even though this is the first ever Linux Lifestyle podcast. What have we found out in the last week, guys?
Well, my discovery this fortnight.
What?
I mean, the thing I found out this week.
Excellent. Any resemblance to existing podcasts is purely coincidental.
It's a thing called Eagle Mode. It's an application that does have a live CD, and it was a live CD that I tried. It's built on Slackware KDE, and you can just boot it up and run. It's a little bit hard to describe, but basically it's all based on the idea that your entire file system you could view from like a really great height, and it would be... It's in a square and it's sort of broken up by size. You've got /root/home/usr/ all the others, and you can zoom in, and each one inside those is it's a little square, and as you sort of zoom in more, it's then inside, you know, you see inside that, and you can zoom in further and you see inside that directory until you get to the files, then you just keep zooming in and you can see the contents of the files.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's like, it's a little bit like on Google Earth, where you start really high up and you zoom all the way in, and you start by seeing the city, and then you get down to the street level. And you can go all the way into the binary level of the files. Really? Yeah.
Whoa. So is this part of KDE, or using KDE technologies or something?
I don't know if it's actually built on KDE. I think that's just a desktop manager they used, just because they needed one. And this is an application inside it.
Right. That sounds pretty cool. I think I saw something like that once. Where you could, it was more like a shoot 'em up game, and you could shoot files, or you could shoot processors to kill them.
Okay, yeah. Awesome.
I think it was like a modification of Doom, actually, and you could walk around, and every all the baddies had process numbers above their heads, so you could shoot them. But of course, if you shot the X server,
what happens if you shoot the inner process?
Yeah.
And a really cool thing about Eagle Mode is if you keep zooming out, obviously you can see it, and it gets smaller until your entire file system just a little dot on the screen. Yeah. And at that point, it's just a glint in an eagle's eye.
Fantastic.
And you zoom in on the eye and keep zooming in. It's great.
That's fantastic.
It looks awesome. I'm still not convinced it's that useful. I have to try it a bit more, but it looks awesome.
Maybe you could, no, I'll give it a go as my new file manager. Maybe that could be... something we try to do to use Eagle Mode as our exclusive file manager.
So that's my discovery. I mean, the thing I found this week.
Well, in John's case, you know, how long is it since you did a podcast? You must have discovered loads.
I guess it must be about 14 months or thereabouts.
What have you discovered in 14 months?
You can drop on us some sysadmin wisdom.
So I guess one is pretty cool. One thing in my company, the quality of our network connection is quite important, and we care significantly about connections to customers and packet loss and that kind of things. And occasionally investigating a line, it's difficult to detect where the problems on the route between you and the customer is happening. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you can do a ping and stuff, you can see your messages are getting through, you can do a trace route and stuff, but that's only like a momentary snapshot in time. But there's a tool called MTR, which, and I forget what it stands for, I think it used to be My Trace Route, but it's now just MTR, I think.
Okay.
Basically, it's a continuously running trace route program, and it updates percentages of packages dropped in real time as it continuously runs it. It's a really handy tool for just, you know, leave it running for 10 minutes and you can just see network problems and packet loss developing on the line as you go and stuff. Uh-huh. It's a pretty handy network diagnostic tool.
But you don't accidentally DDoS people using it?
No. It's not like, you know, a billion packets a second. Yeah. It's just a continuously running trace route. It's really handy.
There's a similar thing you can do with ping, actually. I forget. It's the ping program. There's a flag for it, and I forget which one it is. But each time it sends a packet, it prints just a period, like a dot on the screen. Mm-hmm. And each time it receives one, it just draws a backspace.
Okay.
So you just get, if it's running perfectly, you just get a flashing dot.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And if it starts going down, you get this longer and longer growing line of dots.
Right, so imagine in John's sysadmin job, where he's got like 14 monitors surrounding him, he can look at all these different servers and everything, all these networks, just by recognize their health really quickly with all these programs.
That's never happened. But yeah, so MTR, really useful tool when you're doing network diagnostics.
That's a really useful practical discovery. thing you found out.
We have used it when complaining to providers and stuff about, you know, dropped connections and stuff like that. And we've used it to say to them, look, we can see it happening here on your router, this router, we know it's you.
Right.
And it's helped us out, so.
So what, when you're talking to their technical support people? Or,
yeah.
Yeah. Have you tried turning it off and back on again? Click the start button. No.
It is good when you talk, to someone's network support and you can tell them the IP of the one. That's the machine.
Yeah, you've got the host name right here. Yeah. That's where we're seeing for packets dropped.
Yeah.
That's probably one of the better things I've discovered over the last 14 months. I've clearly had an exciting life.
Well, I've discovered something about GNOME 3, and I know I might...
Are you using GNOME 3?
No, but... I keep discovering things about it.
Still XFCE.
I'm a total XFCE guy, cool. Yeah. Love it. But I know I might have been a bit harsh on GNOME 3 in the past, but it's just been quite frustrating, because when you're very passionate about Linux, to see lots of things get shaken up like that. And But I know they're trying to improve things, but they're talking now about removing the ability to middle-click paste in probably GNOME 3.12.
Yeah.
So this has a lot of purists angry. The GNOME team would say, well, it makes things simpler because at the moment you've got Control and V, a middle click, and sometimes they paste two different things, don't they?
Yeah, like that does confuse
primary
me.
And clipboard. Yeah. So, but the problem is I think people are getting upset because they want it left as an option somewhere, whereas GNOME's just talking about removing it. So, you know, I think they'll sort of, where the direction GNOME 3 has been going, instead of giving people the option, just removing things, and that's frustrating people.
I'll tell you what, though, one of the Google Summer of Code projects this year was GNOME Tweak Tool got some Summer of Code love and some support within the GNOME community as a whole, and it's been quite drastically improved.
Okay.
So it's good to see that, although they have been removing options, the tool that's been putting control back to users is also getting some love. Right. So there is that.
Do you guys use middle click paste? I use it quite a lot.
I didn't know it existed, actually, until about 14 months ago.
Right.
And since then, I do use it quite a bit.
Yeah.
I usually only use it in the terminal because it's easier, because I control shift V is a bit awkward.
Absolutely agree with that. And also, it is a bit quicker. You can just highlight what you want and then middle click paste. It saves highlight, control C, click over to the window, control V. It is a quicker paradigm, I think.
But. Yeah, and well, previously in my job, we used to have to switch between Mac and Linux, and there it's Apple key CMD.
Right, yeah.
So I kept opening the dash. Why won't it paste?
You used to be able to with Firefox, so you probably still can, but I can't try it right this second, but you used to be able to, if you had a URL on the clipboard, you could middle click paste it into a Firefox window and it would open up. It would open the address. So you're pasting the address straight
into
Firefox. And
that's
so
cool.
You find out these things, you know, that middle click does a lot more as time goes on.
I tell you, there is so many things to discover when you're using a computer. I often think... Like, I guess if you had a guide to all of the stuff you can do, you'd be sat there for it for hours. But one of the things I do like about GNOME 3 now is that the latest version of Fedora came with like an intro tutorial thing when you first log in. It gives you like just a brief thing so you can, it shows you, you know, how to open up applications and how to get to the help instructions, which is just enough to get you started and feel a bit more at home.
It seems obvious when you think about it, doesn't it? The more distro's not.
Yeah, it's one of those things you also think, perhaps there's an issue with your window manager.
If you have an introduction. Well, that's fair enough.
But, you know, it makes people feel comfortable, especially if they've spent their whole lives using Windows. And, well, you know, they've got Windows 8 to deal with now. So, great. Yeah. Good work, guys. So let's move on to the part where people ask us to do things. Unless you can think of a more succinct way of describing that.
Has anyone asked us to do something?
No, because we haven't had much time.
Season
1, episode 1.
No one's asked us.
I think we should set ourselves a challenge of some description. But, you know, it's got to be doable. It's got to be reasonable.
The classic one, which I think we kind of floated about before this, was is to try an esoteric distro or an up-and-coming distro for a little while, which actually I think is a really good one because there's some really interesting distros around at the minute. I really want to try Elementary OS with their newest Luna release. I'm really dead keen on trying that.
I've had an idea. We could ask the listeners to suggest distros that we should use. So if we say what we're currently using, they could then say, you know, they know us, listeners know us, so in my case, Mike, I use Zubuntu. I've used Ubuntu for ages. I used to use Slackware. I use Arch Linux sometimes. So, listeners, what would you suggest that I use? I'm a Zubuntu user, Ubuntu and XFCE at the moment. What are you using, Ben?
That's a good question, actually. I was using Ubuntu, but obviously that computer is at work and I no longer go back there.
Oh, yeah.
My laptop at home is KDE, Kubuntu.
Kubuntu, okay.
But to be honest, I've been looking to change that because I'm not sure I want to stick with KDE. And I was going to say, I will challenge myself this. We've been ragging on GNOME, and it's been a long time since I've actually used it for long. I will use GNOME 3 until the next podcast.
Okay.
Cool. Well, I'm still on Ubuntu, I guess. Are you going to...
I think let listeners suggest a GNOME distro for you.
Well, you want to use GNOME 3. Listeners suggest the best GNOME distro for
them. Well, that won't be until the next podcast. So up until the next podcast, I'll be using GNOME 3 on Ubuntu.
Cool.
And readers suggest
okay.
Follow on.
And I, for myself, use Fedora pretty much exclusively.
With
GNOME 3.
Oh, wow. So you are
Yeah, I've been using GNOME 3 since it came out, actually. It does frustrate me at times, but I survived. It's not that bad. but yeah, I do like to use a Red Hat-based OS. I like to use Yum and RPM for familiarity for work and stuff as well. It just stops me getting confused between like running apt cache somewhere else and stuff. So
come on, listeners. Someone suggests that John installs Linux from scratch with TWM and run that for a while. I think that's a good thing that we should do, suggested by the listeners.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds good. We really do need a more succinct name.
We do, yeah. Give us an idea, listeners. Help us along with this. And that brings us on to Voice of the Masses.
Ooh.
Ooh. Up on the Linux Lifestyle blog, we asked you, have you got a flash-free life? Have you been able to free yourself from Adobe Flash, the plugin that many websites actually require, sadly. I mean, it's getting better. The situation's getting better, isn't it? Or move towards web standards, HTML5, yeah. HTML video tag. And how about you guys?
I'm not Flash free. I don't really like Flash, but I'm not passionate about it to actually not do something I want. There's iPlayer, there's 4OD, there's stuff yeah. that needs Flash. And I'd like to be flash free, but as I say,
I found myself, I do have it installed, but there's not many occasions where I think it's actually being used. I guess the main thing I would do that used to be flash would be YouTube, but I think by default I get the HTML5 client on YouTube now.
You can set that as an option.
Yeah, I think I set it as an option, so I don't think I use it there.
But are you missing some videos that way? I believe it's not every video.
I don't use. And the main thing is, to be honest with you, I use for general browsing my phone a lot more when I'm sat on the train and stuff. And when I come home, I often use my phone at home as well. I just don't get my computer out to boot it up and get going. So
after using computers all day.
Yeah, so maybe my life is far more flash-free than I realise, since I don't use flash on my phone. It's quite doable, I think.
Yeah, I still use it for YouTube primarily. But I think the most essential thing is, if you do have flash, get click to play. A browser plugin so that Flash doesn't play automatically, because you can go to sites and they've got 4 or 5 Flash adverts playing at the same time. That takes your data through the roof if you're on mobile connection, slows your computer down. It's just annoying. So
some websites have these massive, I don't know what they call them, like the whole background of the page is some kind of Flash advert, and I tried to scroll it on like a Core i7 processor with 8 GB of RAM. I'm scrolling it and it's like refresh rate of like two frames a second sort of thing. It's ridiculous.
It is crazy. Well, our listeners have given us some words of wisdom. Rowan Lewis says, I've disabled Flash in my main browser, Firefox, along with a Grease Monkey script that forces YouTube to use HTML5.
Yeah, cool.
I thought you could do that with an option on the YouTube site as well. But it says, unfortunately, however, I still need Flash to use iView, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's online service. While it's always required Flash, they managed to break things for Linux and Mac users earlier this year by requiring a very specific version of Flash. Apparently, it gives them more control, some kind of special DRM. So, yeah, and he also...
I was going to say, I don't know enough about it, but I know with some versions of Flash, and you never find this anywhere, on Debian-based systems, you need HAL installed for some DRM, and it just doesn't play. I know with some 4OD videos, you just get a blank screen, no errors, won't play, until you install HAL Daemon, I think the package is called.
So it's worth Rowan having a crack at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you said, Rowan also says that the open source alternatives unfortunately can't do the job.
No,
you
know, there's never...
There's ganache, there's...
Interesting, though, because it probably will become, I guess, more important for the open source ones, because your mention of specific versions there reminded me that Adobe have stopped saying they're going to support Linux, aren't they? They're only going to support it through Chrome.
Yeah.
Which is quite a, you know, that's going to push a lot of users away from Flash again, isn't it, on the Linux platform, or at least make it harder for us to enjoy the benefits of it.
Yeah. Eric Crampton says, a variety of sites I visit still need Flash, unfortunately. I used to be a true Linux geek and would have probably gotten Ganache working, or at least tried it, but life keeps me far too busy these days to do as much experimentation as I'd like. These days, I just take the easy road and add to the Adobe Yum repository and cross my fingers that their insecure mess doesn't get me boned. I look forward to the day when Flash is dead. Wow. Yeah. Stephen Michael Kellett says, running ARM makes it easy to be Flash-free. Adobe doesn't support it to date with the latest Flash versioning. Shimmy says, since Firefox 24 introduced support for H.264 HTML5 video, there is no longer any need for it. The rare YouTube video that does not play without Flash due to advertisements I open in SM Player. Okay. And Espada V8 says something a bit similar to you, John. He says, doing most of my browsing on either my Android phone or tablet means that I haven't really used Flash for a while now, and the very rare times that I need to use it, Chrome built-in version works fine. He also says, like everyone else, it's sad to see people leaving from the Tux Radar podcast, but he's glad to see a new podcast rise from the ashes.
Yeah.
Here we are. Excellent. So.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'd add to that is, like I say, Flash doesn't annoy me too much, but Silverlight.
I never actually installed Silverlight. I think Andrew Gregory did once when he was trying to book a Ryanair flight or use a map on the Ryanair website or EasyJet or something. But,
I'm surprised Ryanair didn't charge you for the privilege of downloading Silverlight.
How many sites still use it? I mean, is Silverlight still in existence? Has Microsoft not retired it? Or?
It's still, I believe, mainly used for Netflix, Love Film,
right.
DRM.
Right.
And that is a shame, because those are the things I really want to see on Linux next. Now that Steam have got, you know, games on Linux, what I would really love to see is a really quality movie rental service that you can use easily on Linux.
Yeah. I mean, someone did some great work packaging up Firefox and Wine with Silverlight.
Oh, really?
Yeah, certainly on any Deb system.
Okay, I'll look into that.
Apps get it, and it works. But it's an ugly hack.
Yeah, but if it works, and I can enjoy Love Film or whatever, because...
Yeah, I think it might be called Netflix Desktop, the package.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Great. Well, I think this has been an awesome success. The first Linux Lifestyle podcast. It's great that you've come all the way, John, from random parts of the country.
Really pleased to be here.
Yeah.
Bath is so beautiful, I forget. It is. It's much more pleasant than the southeast of England.
Yeah.
Sorry, now I've just started another religious war against the southeast as well as Devon. Slowly reducing the places I can go and safely live in.
We'll put some disguise on you when you leave. Yeah. Don't worry.
There are a lot of trees, so I like the trees, and I like Box Hill.
Yeah. But yeah, thanks, listeners, for following us over to this new podcast. You know, we're still young. We've got lots of ideas, we hope. We will grow up into a mighty oak tree of podcast branches. And yeah, we'll let us know. Drop us a line. Let us know what you think about the podcast, all your ideas, all your feedback. Just say hello, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and don't forget to suggest distros for us to use.
Yes,
yeah,
please do. Please give us lots of ideas. Obscure, unknown distros that could really change our lives. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Cheers.